And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for what is always the best hour of your life, the one that's happening right now at all times. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that is what all of us want. This evening's show is about a topic that is of global importance. And it's also a topic that I bet few of you have thought much about. And when I say of global importance, I mean that it can critically impact a host of our society's most weighty challenges, ranging from climate change to world hunger to the destruction of the rainforests and global water usage and saving lives of billions of animals and so many other environmental issues that you've heard many times on this show. But the topic is different, and that is, can your dog and cat be vegan? We haven't covered this before. And partially, we haven't covered this before because we didn't have an answer. The research has been scant, and we have not been able to put something together where we could say definitively, here's something that you can hang your hat on. This is the direction you can go. So now, of course, some of you are likely asking yourself, how can dogs and cats going vegan be so major as to change the world? And even if that's true, don't dogs and cats have to eat meat? We all know that, right? Well, those questions and many others are what we're aiming to get answered over this next hour. And again, for those of you who are gasping, thinking about how ridiculous it is to even consider moving animals off of meat, I will suggest you listen in and see what the best research to date says about this topic. I'm guessing you're going to be surprised. And joining us to address this emerging topic is one of the best authorities on these issues, since they are the focus of his work and research. His name is Andrew Knight, professor of animal welfare and ethics and founding director of the University of Winchester Center for Animal Welfare. He is adjunct professor in the School of Environment and Science at Griffith University, Queensland, the European Board of Veterinary Specialization, European, and Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, Veterinary Specialist in Animal Welfare Science, Ethics and Law, American and New Zealand Veterinary Specialist in Animal Welfare, Fellow of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, and Principal Fellow of Advanced Higher Education. And I say all that because I want you to understand that this is someone who has considered these topics deeply. He previously directed the Clinical Skills Laboratory and taught animal ethics, welfare, veterinary practice management, and surgical and medical skills at one of the largest veterinary schools in the world, and that's in the Caribbean. He also practiced veterinary medicine, mostly around London, for nearly a decade. He's the author of two books, The Rutledge Handbook of Animal Welfare, which has now been released, and The Costs and Benefits of Animal Experiments. He has around 150 academic and 80 popular publications and an extensive series of social media videos on topics ranging from plant-based companion animal diets to humane clinical and surgical skills training. Some of his publications have appeared in leading scientific and medical journals such as New Scientist, the British Medical Journal USA, and PLOS ONE. He's delivered hundreds of presentations at conferences and universities internationally, has been honored with 14 awards and 22 research grants, and finally, he's a keen outdoor enthusiast. Welcome to The Healthy Planet, Andrew Knight.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
It's really such a pleasure. Andrew, before we get into the discussion of the day, tell us a bit about how your life led you to the work that you're doing today.
Crikey. Well, I was a clinically practicing veterinarian, mostly around London. It's been very clear that our cats and dogs are increasingly suffering from diseases associated with their diet, in particular the epidemic of being overweight and obese. It's well known that people who follow plant-based diets themselves tend to have better body mass indexes and a range of health benefits. And I wondered whether these might apply to cats and dogs maintained on nutritionally sound plant-based diets as well. On top of that, we've got increasing concerns about our global issues, particularly climate change, biodiversity loss, environmental degradation, much of which is linked to the heavy footprint of animal agriculture within our global food production system. So I wondered what the potential might be for cats and dogs to go on to vegan diets, whether this might affect their health. Would it harm them? Would it benefit their health? what might the environmental benefits be of doing this? So for the last year, I've been conducting large-scale studies into this area, looking at health outcomes in large numbers of cats and dogs maintained on these diets, also studying their behavior to see how happy they are with vegan diets, and also calculating things like the environmental benefits that might accrue if the world's cats and dogs were maintained on nutritionally sound vegan diets. And with a tiny number of other researchers around the world, we've created since last year a really exciting emerging evidence base relying on really large-scale studies with thousands of animals, giving new insights into this area. And it's really starting to create a revolution in this area, in I suppose, knowledge and also practice. Companies are coming on board very rapidly now to produce new diets, which are nutritionally sound and vegan, based on these sorts of research results. So a revolution is actually starting in this area of pet food. It's a very exciting space to be involved in at the moment.
Indeed, I share that excitement. And I think our listeners will, to some degree, by the end of this interview as well, because the outcomes of what you're doing could potentially be transformative. I'll also mention that, adding to the question of how you got into this work, after exploring your www.andrewknight.info website, it's pretty evident that your self-description as an outdoor enthusiast likely has a lot to do with your professional work that has you focused on protecting the natural world and its creatures. And I can personally say that my awe and appreciation of nature and animals has been a strong motivation and provided inspiration for me to engage in the nonprofit work that I do with Healthy Planet. I'm guessing that you've drawn similar inspiration from that awe and appreciation of nature.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of the biggest tragedies of our time that we are currently living through the sixth mass extinction event since fossil records began. And that's an event in which more than 50% of all living species die. And that is actually being caused very much by human activity on the planet. It's hard to think of any greater tragedy, I think, than the wholesale destruction of the other living species with whom we share our planet. If you sort of scan the rest of the universe, it's hard to find anything, I think, as wonderful, diverse, and valuable as living creatures, and to be eliminating them wholesale for lesser objectives, quite frankly, consumer goods, a lot of luxury expenditure of fossil fuel-based products and industries and so on, is really a tragic thing. I think we should do all we can to try to preserve the most valuable thing that we have on the planet with us, and that is surely biodiversity and the rich diversity of living creatures valuable in their own right, and also because they safeguard the future for ourselves as well. We rely upon the ecosystem services that they contribute to maintaining clean air, clean water, a healthy agricultural system, and so on. And we threaten all of those when we wipe out animals such as bees, animals who clean our water systems, and so on. So yes, I do spend a little bit of time in the outdoors. Being an academic, I work hours which are too long, and I do try to balance that a little bit with getting out into the great outdoors as much as I can and doing adventurous things out there. And it does give me the opportunity to appreciate what we are losing, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yep. Well, when talking about feeding cats and dogs a vegan diet, of course, as I mentioned, some would say they've always eaten meat, so don't rock the boat. Let them eat what they eat naturally, and that's the end of it. So let's set the stage for this discussion about whether they do well on a vegan diet by having you first describe why it's so critically important that this question be asked and researched in the first place. So I want you to take as much time as you need to lay out the impacts that producing all the dog and cat food in the world makes on our planet, the world's food supply, human and animal lives, and more, and therefore what there is for us to potentially gain from collectively transitioning away from meat foods and toward plant foods for our cats and dogs.
Sure, Bob. Well, worldwide, there are an estimated 900 million dogs that are owned and about 220 million cats. So that's about 1.1 billion cats and dogs. And these jointly consume a significant proportion of the estimated 80 billion land animals and 1 to 3 trillion fish that we kill each year within the global food system. The meat-based pet food sector is also a major user of land and water. It contributes probably about 2 to 3% of all human-generated greenhouse gases. So these all have major impacts on things like animal welfare, global biodiversity loss, and species extinctions. The bizarre thing is that to date, barely a handful of researchers have studied this issue, even though this is clearly one of the most neglected, potentially beneficial and solvable global problems affecting animal welfare and species conservation. My initial calculations indicate that if the world's owned cats and dogs were transitioned onto nutritionally sound vegan diets, this would probably save enough food energy to feed over 110 million people. And that's more than the entire population of famine-prone Ethiopia. And it would also save over 6 billion land animals each year from slaughter. And that's a number nearly equivalent to the entire human population of the Earth. On top of that, we would get vast savings in the use of land, water, fossil fuels, pesticides, fertilizers, and we would eliminate probably 2 to 3% of all human-generated greenhouse gases. So there's incredible potential for benefits here for people who need more food in countries such as the developing world, for the environment, and also for the welfare of so-called food animals. On top of all of that, the studies are showing that there are certain health benefits that cats and dogs are likely to experience if they are transitioned onto nutritionally sound vegan diets. And one of those is potentially increased longevity. The most recent large-scale study to be published by veterinary specialists at Guelph Veterinary College in Canada has demonstrated that previously owned vegan dogs in the large-scale study actually lived 1.5 years longer than dogs who were not following a vegan diet. Their average lifespan went from 12.6 years up to 14.1 years. So 1.5 years for a dog's life, it's sometimes said that every year of a dog's life equates to about 7 years of a human life. So 1.5 years is about an extra decade. I think many of us would be pretty interested in getting an extra decade of life at the end of our own lifetimes. That seems to be a benefit that dogs maintained on nutritionally sound diets can receive. On top of that, they probably have a better quality of life as well, because they seem to have, in these large-scale studies, statistically significant reductions in problems such as mobility, musculoskeletal problems, excessive body weight. So getting potentially better quantity of life and better quality of life, or at least no reductions in these scores. There were no healthcare parameters in which the vegan dogs did worse or vegan cats did worse, and in some of them they did better than the animals maintained on meat-based diets when these statistics were done. So it's a super exciting area, offering huge potential for the planet in terms of environmental sustainability, for the welfare of food animals and for the welfare of cats and dogs as well. So I'm just really excited to be involved in this, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to your listeners about this today.
That's a lot of issues you mentioned. Everything from putting off the climate emergency that we're experiencing globally, and that is worsening. We're talking about species extinction, feeding hungry people. I mean, that alone, any one of these alone is enough of an issue for us to say, we need to pay attention to this immediately. The pesticides, the fertilizers, the rainforests, the biodiversity loss, and the extinctions, as you mentioned. So with all that, it's pretty clear that if we're going to be making decisions with level heads, and if our animal friends did well on a plant-based diet, we would all want to move away from all the damage that comes from the raising and the killing of animals for our cats and dogs. So, since you've been deeply engaged in assessing the research on this topic, as well as doing research yourself, I'll ask you to take any amount of time you'd like to answer the big question of the day, which is, and you started answering this, what does the current research tell us about the healthfulness of a vegan diet for cats and dogs? And start with dogs, since you already started with mentioning them. And I think also if you could mention about how dogs became domesticated, that might help people understand about how they've evolved to be able to fare well on a plant-based diet.
Sure, Bob. So it's understandable that people think of dogs and cats as being carnivores. But if we consider the evolutionary history of these animals, we know that dogs have been domesticated for about 20 to 40,000 years. They roamed around the landscape following our human ancestors in hunter-gatherer bands. And they were able to receive a variety of food scraps from our ancestors, including scraps of meat from hunting parties, but also primarily cooked starchy root vegetables, which was the staple diet used by our ancestors. So over time, the dogs that were successful in getting nutritional benefit from this variety of food scraps were more successful than the wolves from whom they had evolved. And the species changed into being modern domesticated dogs who are biologically omnivorous, actually. Cats have a bit of a different ancestry. They've been domesticated for about 8 to 10,000 years, and their role has really been to hunt rodents who gathered around human food stores, in particular grain stores, and they haven't been consuming cooked starchy root vegetables, and they maintained their original carnivorous natures. None of this is very relevant for cats and dogs maintained on artificial diets today, which are commonly comprised of a variety of body parts from animals they would never naturally eat, such as fish, cows, and other animals with all sorts of unnatural additives, packaged into unnatural formulations and fed at predictable times each day. So this bears very little resemblance to the feeding regime or ingredients consumed by an ancestral cat or dog. None of this is really very important to what cats and dogs really need today. What they need are diets that fulfill all their nutritional needs and that they are happy to eat and that provide them with good welfare. So diets need to be formulated to be nutritionally complete and balanced by pet food companies using plant, mineral and synthetic sources and taking careful steps to ensure that their diets are nutritionally sound. And they need to be formulated to be sufficiently palatable to cats and dogs. So since last year, colleagues and myself have been publishing the first really large-scale study looking at health outcomes in cats and dogs. We found some really interesting findings. For the first time, we've been doing studies with well over 1,000 animals in our sample groups. In fact, the study that we published earlier this year in PLOS One, which is one of the world's top open-access scientific journals, looked at over 2,500 dogs, so really large numbers of dogs in these studies. There are now about 8 studies looking at health outcomes in vegan or nearly vegan dogs and in cats, and more are actually coming. Of the 8 studies in dogs, 7 out of 8 actually support the use of nutritionally sound vegan diets. They show equivalent or superior health outcomes. And the sort of benefits we tend to see are in 2 clusters. One seems to potentially relate to animal-sourced allergens in the diet, things like beef, chicken and other animal allergens, and we seem to see a reduction in problems in dogs, such as skin responses. Humans often get hay fever in response to environmental allergens. For dogs, they get inflamed skin. So we're seeing better skin conditions, better coat conditions, less ear problems in particular. Dogs often get problems with their ears. The ears are a part of the skin that are particularly prone to getting problems because they are a humid microenvironment within the ear canal. They also have less gastrointestinal problems, it seems, on these diets, and that may be related to reacting to ingredients in the food as well. So when you take out the dietary hazards that may be in meat-based diets and you simply leave all the nutrients that the animals need, it would stand to reason that they would be having less problems, and that's what seems to be coming up consistently across multiple studies when we look at this. That seems to be one of the benefits. The other one seems to be related to body weight and mobility. We seem to be seeing lower rates of excessive body weight, musculoskeletal problems, and better mobility in dogs. And we know from the most recent study that they seem to be living longer. We also want them to have good quality of life. And often dogs, unfortunately, do get mobility problems in old age and their quality of life declines. So the fact that these plant-based dogs seem to do better with mobility and musculoskeletal problems should be giving them a better quality of life. That may perhaps be because these diets are less prone to having excessive calories. We know that excessive calorie consumption leading to overweight and obesity is one of the most common healthcare problems affecting dogs and their quality of life today. It affects now more than half of all dogs, unfortunately, and something that's been rising over time. So we are seeing those benefits for the dogs, which is really fantastic. For the cats, we've also got large-scale studies looking at health outcomes in cats. And interestingly, we're seeing some similar things. We're seeing also lower rates of gastrointestinal problems, just like with the dogs. We're also seeing potentially better mobility, musculoskeletal problems, and so on, which is great. Looking initially at the results from a very large-scale study of cats that was published last year, it seemed that the previously owned cats in this study were living longer if they were on a vegan diet. In this particular case, though there was no statistically significant difference between the two groups, there were no health parameters really where there was a reduction in health outcomes for dogs or cats on a vegan diet that was statistically significant. They were all either the same or the vegans did better. And it does stand to reason if you provide a diet which meets all their nutritional needs, but you remove some of the hazards that might be present in the meat-based diets, particularly animal allergens and excessive calories. But there are many other additives as well that go into those diets. So there you go. That's the evidence today. There are more studies coming in this area. There are some really exciting results coming. We are working at the moment on more studies on health outcomes on both dogs and cats. And the initial indications from these statistical analyses confirm and even strengthen the previous conclusions that we have been able to draw so far. So it's a very exciting area indeed.
Absolutely. And I think this will surprise a lot of people. All the studies that are being done are not showing that the animals need to suffer or give up health in order to do what's right for the environment and the world, right? That transitioning them so far has been shown to only be helpful to them. And another thing that I'll mention, which you touched upon earlier, is that people will often say, I want to feed my dog or cat a natural diet. That's why I give them meat and the canned foods and everything. But the point you make is very important, that what they're eating in the cans is nothing like a natural diet or the kibble. Talk a little bit more about that.
There's a brilliant example in which Jed Gillen addresses this point in his book, Obligate Carnivore. And he says, try this experiment. Skip your cat's breakfast one morning and bring him or her to the beach instead. Driven by hunger, what natural instincts might kick in? What are the chances that your cat will splash out into the water, swim 50 or so miles out to the deep ocean, and thereby engage a 1,200-pound animal, because an adult tuna can be as large as a horse, in an underwater battle to the death in order to fulfill the natural feline diet of fish? The idea that fish is a natural food for cats is absurd. They're descended from desert creatures and are notoriously hydrophobic. Have you ever given your cat a bath? So he's making the point there that it's entirely possible for cats and dogs to consume and indeed enjoy a variety of ingredients which are not naturally parts of their diet. So you can argue, I think, about whether the diets that cats and dogs are fed today, whether they be meat-based diets or vegan diets, are natural and whether the animals are suffering by being fed those diets. But more, I think, important than the viewpoints of people about this question is the viewpoints of the animals themselves. So how can we ask the animals how they feel about these various different diets? And the only way that we can do this until we learn to actually talk to them, if we ever do, is by a detailed study of their behavior. And so what we did was we studied the behavioral outcomes of over 2,300 dogs, so really large numbers once again, and 1,100 cats when they were fed vegan pet food or meat-based pet food. And we studied 10 indicators of dietary palatability, so how much they enjoyed their meals in dogs, and 15 in cats, which included all the indicators that have really ever been described in previous literature and some new ones as well. The first thing we did was we looked at the extent to which the animals were likely to display all of these behaviors. And there were things like, did the dog sort of jump up and down when you approached with its food bowl? Did it bark? Did it bolt down its food? Did it try and guard its food bowl? Did the cat sort of sniff at its food and walk away, drop its food? All these sorts of indicators that people will recognize in their own cats and dogs at home. So we looked at how likely the animals were to display all these different behaviors. And the first thing we did was we looked at which clusters were varying consistently with one another. And from that, we could identify some as being positive indicators and some as negative indicators of palatability. And the second thing is we looked at, were the meat-based or the vegan diets more likely to result in positive or negative indicators of palatability? Once we had done all that and analyzed it statistically, we found that overall there was no significant difference as far as you can tell from detailed study of the behavior of really large numbers of cats and dogs. Those fed vegan diets seem to be just as happy with their food as those fed meat-based diets. And I suppose that stands to reason, because if a company produces a new diet which is not going to be enjoyed by cats and dogs, very shortly they're going to be out of business. So, of course, pet food companies do take great care to ensure that the products they produce are palatable. You can't apply marketing techniques to cats and dogs. The products really do have to work. They really do have to be tasty, or you will go out of business. So they seem to be doing that successfully.
It's interesting that you say that it's not that dogs and cats have a biological requirement for meat or chicken or beef or a lamb or a goat, but that it's the nutrient content of their food that's important. And that in itself is an important point to get across, because we now have the ability to create foods with any kind of nutrient profile.
That's right. So we often forget that cats, dogs, and indeed all species have no biological requirements for any particular ingredient. What they have requirements for is nutrients. And commercial vegan diets produced by good companies aim to supply all the nutrients cats and dogs need from sources which include plants, minerals, and synthetic ingredients. I would add that the same sources are actually used in meat-based diets. They also tend to include some plants, some minerals, and some synthetic ingredients. People often think about the amino acid taurine, which is naturally found in meat and is a requirement of cats because they can't produce it themselves. Without that, they will eventually get visual problems, birth problems, and heart problems as well. So the taurine that's naturally found in meat is actually heavily degraded and destroyed by the high temperatures and pressures used in processing of pet food, and has to be added back in after the pet food has been processed from a synthetic source of taurine. So meat-based pet foods do have synthetic ingredients in them, as well as minerals such as calcium, which is very necessary for cats and dogs, as well as plant-based sources. They've often got a lot of cereal. So the vegan diets have the same sorts of ingredients. They just also have meat. They have other sources of protein from typically plant-based sources included, and they may have synthetic amino acids as well. So biologically, what they need is the full set of nutrients in the right proportions, supplied in a formulation that's adequately digestible and sufficiently palatable so that the animals will be happy to eat it. We know now from the large-scale studies that these diets generally are being produced just as tastily for the cats and dogs as the meat-based diets. And the data I've seen on digestibility indicates comparable outcomes between meat-based and plant-based pet food ingredients. So there's not a lot of difference there. I suppose the proof is in the pudding, you might say, and it really the most important thing is actually the health outcomes for the animals at the end of the day when they've been maintained on these diets for long periods of time. And that's what we're now studying in these very large-scale studies with, you know, well over 1,000 animals in these studies. And we're finding that the health outcomes for cats and dogs maintained on nutritionally sound vegan diets are at least as good. Sometimes they're actually better. It's very exciting to have found that previously on vegan dogs seem to be living 1.5 years longer than dogs maintained on meat-based diets. Sometimes they're even achieving better health outcomes.
Your research also compared the healthfulness of raw meat diets, which are often held up by people as the gold standard of what I'm feeding my cat or dog. But your research compared the healthfulness of those diets to conventional diets and vegan diets. And you can talk about the results for that, but you also mentioned that during one of your discussions that raw meats were actually dangerous to both animals and their people guardians. So talk a little bit about raw meat diets.
There's a significant body of published studies showing that raw meat diets tend to suffer from two problems. One is nutritional imbalances, such as in calcium and phosphorus, and often deficiencies as well. They will have a lot of protein, but they may be lacking in essential vitamins and minerals. The second problem, perhaps even bigger, is the high prevalence of pathogens, such as bacteria and other pathogens within raw meat diets. And it's well established that dogs and cats that are fed raw meat diets have higher rates of infections and infestations with parasites. And unfortunately, so do the people living in the households with those cats and dogs. So they're either acquiring it from the diets as they're preparing them for their pets, or else they're picking them up from their pets. So for these reasons, raw meat diets are not normally recommended by veterinarians and certainly not recommended by us. Interestingly, when we studied health outcomes and differences between dogs fed vegan and raw meat and conventional meat diets, we found that the dogs fed raw meat diets seemed to have pretty good health outcomes, which we weren't expecting. But what we have realized is that the dogs fed raw meat were on average significantly younger than the other dietary groups, which is health protective. Younger animals are less likely to suffer from health problems. And we have gone and done some more advanced statistics whereby we have factored in the effects of age as well as differences in sexes, neutering status, breed, dog size, and so on. When we've constructed these statistical models that allow us to equalize the populations with respect to age and all the other demographic variables, we found that the apparent advantage of the raw meat diet disappeared. The vegan diet has been shown to be clearly healthier, actually, than the raw meat diet. So there's no doubt about the raw meat diet as being significantly more hazardous. And it seems it's also not as healthy once you equalize the ages and other factors between the populations.
That's good to know. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're talking about what the research tells us about the ability of dogs and cats to not just survive, but thrive on a vegan diet. Our guest is Andrew Knight, veterinary professor of animal welfare and ethics, founding director of the University of Winchester Center for Animal Welfare, researcher and author of two books on animal welfare, and a cat and dog veterinarian with many years of experience in general small animal practice. You can find out more about this issue and Andrew at www.sustainablepetfood.info. That's sustainablepetfood.info. Andrew, one of the things that we think about when we're feeding animals their foods is, as you mentioned, the palatability of it. And up until now, that palatability had to be attained with things like nutritional yeast and whatnot. And that's still the case. That could be helpful. But I will tell you that when we have a plant-based meat in this house, whether it's a burger or some plant-based chicken, our cat comes running. The point is that we can create smells and tastes for animals that they go crazy for. Is that part of what you're talking about in your equation about making the food palatable for animals?
Sure. The sense of smell is much more important in cats and dogs than it is for people. For a new diet to be successful, commercially successful, cats and dogs have to be happy to eat it. So companies need to produce diets that smell good and that also look good, the right color, the right taste, the right texture, but particularly the sense of smell. And clearly, there has been a sea change in these products in recent years, as there has been with plant-based products for human beings, with the range rapidly expanding and becoming ever better, much better than it used to be. I think the same thing has gone on in the pet food sector and is currently still happening. There is a revolution underway in this area at the moment. I used to have a pet food company coming and talking to me about once every 3 months, saying they were interested in setting up a new product or brand in this area. And it's now happening about every week or two. So that's over the space of 2 years. So this sector is growing extremely rapidly. I think it's because people are increasingly concerned about trying to achieve really good health and well-being for cats and dogs. That's something that people have come to expect more of in recent decades compared to in times past. They've expected their cats and dogs to live longer, have better standards of care and better diets, and to come into the house, whereas they used to be out in the back garden to perhaps come up onto the bed, in your case, into your dining room and be eating some of your food by the sound of it, Bob. So people are expecting better standards for their cats and dogs. They're more concerned about the welfare of so-called food animals that are farmed and killed for pet food and for human consumption, and also, of course, about environmental concerns. And we're now much more aware of the impacts of the food sector than we used to be. We know the food sector overall contributes about a third of all human-generated greenhouse gases, and the livestock sector produces 20% of all greenhouse gases, according to most recent study in Nature Food last year. So anything we can do to increase this sector is incredibly important. It's about the only area in which we can all make a wholesale change very quickly by simply changing a lifestyle choice. And it's different from essential energy supplies and those of us who are required to travel to work, for example. It's not very easy to change those sources of greenhouse gases, but it is very easy to change this one, which is why it's so important, I think. So yeah, things are changing very rapidly in this space. Many more cat and dog guardians are getting interested in this area, as are companies who are sensing huge amounts of money to be made in this area in the future.
Sure.
The vegan pet food sector is already growing at nearly 8% per year, or was growing before all this new evidence came to light about the positive health outcomes and palatability and environmental benefits of these diets. And it's going to, I think, grow much more quickly now that this information is coming to light, once the world's cats and dogs owners become aware of this.
8% per year growth is very impressive. I think that means it would double in about 8 or 9 years.
Yes, indeed. Look, in 2020, the vegan pet food market was valued globally as being worth about $9 billion. And it was estimated that that would grow to $16 billion by 2028. And as I say, that's before all these large-scale studies have been published and all this new evidence is coming to light about health benefits associated with these diets and environmental benefits and so on. So that's going to grow even more quickly once that information does get out there on a large scale.
Now,
yeah, it's a really, really exciting area. There's a new disruptive industry actually emerging in this space, similar to what occurred with the large-scale revolution in plant-based products for human beings, actually, and how that's disrupted
right.
Things like the milk industry with so many milk alternatives, the meat industry, cheeses, and so on. So we're now seeing the same thing happening in the pet food space.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, this information that you're putting forth is not agreed upon by many animal advocacy organizations. And when I did a web search on, quote, vegan cats, the first results that came up was from the ASPCA. And the quote that showed up on the search page itself was, "There are a number of reasons why cats don't do well on a vegan diet, but it all essentially comes down to this. They aren't adapted to it. Feeding a cat a plant-based diet is a lot like feeding a cow a meat-based diet. Their digestive system isn't geared to handle it, and they will not thrive on it," end quote. So the research-based information that you've been talking about is anything but accepted in many circles. One person who I've heard you quote went as far as to state that feeding a cat a vegan diet could be considered a crime under the Animal Welfare Act. Let me get your take on some of these other opinions. And do you think they still exist because they haven't yet examined the topic and the newest evidence as thoroughly as you have?
Sure. There's been a long history of people feeding inappropriate homemade diets of all kinds. There's various feeding fads that have occurred in the pet food sector. One of the most recent is the so-called BARF diet, the bones and raw food diet. So just as with the human food space, there are fads in pet foods. People create homemade diets or purchase diets, which are often nutritionally unsound, and animals have had welfare problems on these diets. So it's understandable that welfare organisations such as the ASPCA and also some veterinary organisations are very concerned about the use of anything that's not a conventional mainstream diet. However, what they need to do is to become aware of all of the new evidence that has emerged in this area only since last year. So very, very recently, it hasn't been there before. And we now know that when these diets are formulated by reputable pet food companies to be nutritionally sound, the cats and dogs maintained on these diets very clearly have health outcomes which are at least as good, and in some cases actually better, than cats and dogs maintained on traditional meat-based diets. And there are clear underlying reasons why that might be the case. Less exposure to certain dietary hazards on vegan pet foods. So really, if people are genuinely concerned about the welfare of cats and dogs, they urgently need to educate themselves about the new evidence that has emerged from large-scale studies of health outcomes, looking at well over 1,000 of these animals in each of these studies, and which are growing in number. There's now quite a sizable body of evidence in this area. The findings are very consistent, And it's clear that the feeding of nutritionally sound vegan pet food can result in health outcomes which are as good or better than those associated with traditional meat-based diets, and also clearly have a range of major environmental benefits as well, and also benefits for the welfare of so-called food animals. So there's just no good reason at all for not updating one's position on this issue. And indeed, that's what some organisations are doing. The British Veterinary Association has recently stated in the leading veterinary news journal in the United Kingdom, where this issue has been debated on the front pages recently, they have committed to updating their position on this issue in light of all the new evidence that has emerged. The Pet Food Manufacturers Association of the United Kingdom is doing likewise. So the ASPCA and all the other organisations that have not yet realised that a sea change is underway in this area also need to update their positions on this issue in light of all the recent, sizable and remarkably consistent evidence that has emerged in this area.
Now, that makes sense. I know that with plant-based diets for humans, back decades ago, it took a while for the human dietetic organizations to come around and actually say, you know what? If you're eating a well-planned diet that's all plant-based foods, it actually could provide benefits toward preventing and even treating certain diseases. But it took a while. So I think that's what's happening, because we're in the early stages of people understanding that animals could possibly go in this direction and thrive.
Yeah, I think in every field, there are early adopters and people who are interested in innovation and looking at the evidence and finding the best ways to do things. And there are also those who resist change at the other end. And then there's everybody else in the middle, really. So, you know, the early adopters and anybody who is interested in the scientific evidence and making rational policy decisions on this issue is I think, changing. Change is coming, whether individual organizations agree with it or not. The point made by the person that you mentioned was a valid one, that if you feed a nutritionally unsound diet, you could be violating the Animal Welfare Act. But that applies as much to meat-based pet foods as to vegan pet foods. And it's also true that either kind of pet food can be formulated to meet all the nutritional needs of animals. There's nothing sort of sacred about either kind of diet with respect to the likelihood of being nutritionally sound or unsound. It comes down to the manufacturing processes and whether companies are utilizing good standards during product design, manufacture, and things like storage and shipping thereafter.
So the change is coming. The question is, are people's attitudes changing with the research? I've had friends with vegan dogs who have lived healthy, long lives for decades. And on the other hand, the idea of feeding cats a vegan diet has been less accepted in the general population, and even among those who eat a plant-based diet, who would like nothing better than just stop buying meat for their cats, as I mentioned. It appears that many people who would love to stop feeding their animals meat would express the same concern even today. But it appears that, especially with your work coming out and this research being accumulated, that this hesitancy is changing. And you've actually done research about whether those who currently feed their dogs and cats conventional or raw meat diets would consider feeding their animal companions an alternative diet of various kinds. Talk about the results of that and another study on 3,600 people who had cats and dogs.
That's right. So last year, we surveyed over 4,000 pet owners to see what percentage would be willing to consider plant-based pet foods as an alternative to meat-based pet foods, and what were the most important factors that would need to be provided by these diets for those people to make that change. We got results very consistent with a study the year before by colleagues from Guelph Vet School in Canada, which was more than 3,600 people. And across these two studies, we found that 35 to 46% of all people currently feeding meat-based pet foods would be willing to consider alternatives. So a bit under half at the moment. This is not bad, I think, given that most people are not even aware of all this new evidence yet. Amongst people who are already following vegan diets themselves, it rises to over three quarters would be interested in feeding their pets vegan diets. But they want certain key concerns to be satisfied. And the top five concerns: pet health outcomes. They want their animals to be healthy, of course. The nutritional soundness and quality of the diets. The palatability, so how much the animals enjoy their food. Environmental sustainability was the next one on the list. And interestingly, price didn't even make it into the top five on our list. That came in at number six. So what we've been doing, and a handful of other people around the world, have been studying each of these areas. So pet health outcomes, the steps taken by manufacturers to ensure nutritional soundness and quality, and are these different between vegan and meat-based diets, pet palatability, and also environmental sustainability. And so we now have this collective body of evidence which are satisfying all of the concerns, the top five concerns of all these pet owners. And I think once this information gets out there to pet owners, we're going to see a massive increase in the purchasing of these nutritionally sound vegan diets, which are now being produced by pet food companies much more, I think, in anticipation of these future trends.
And that's very important. The fact that people are actually saying, a good portion of them, that they would move from conventional and raw meat diets to a plant-based diet if those conditions were met, that's very, very big.
It is. And once we have many more examples out there in the community of cats and dogs who are maintained on nutritionally sound vegan pet food and are seen to be doing well by everybody else, and you get other benefits too, such as reduction of veterinary visits and veterinary medications resulting in cost savings, then I think many more people will be interested in trialing those diets for themselves or for their animals, I should say.
It is very exciting. Well, let's move to the personal. And for all the people who are listening to this and thinking, you know, this could be something that I'd be interested in, how do you recommend that people go about transitioning their animals to a plant-based diet? Where would they start? What resources would you recommend for people who are really starting from square one, who may not have ever even thought about this before?
Sure. So with every new pet food, it's important to ensure that it is nutritionally complete and balanced. So start by checking the labeling claims on the tin or packet. Make sure it's not being produced just as a treat or a snack, but is intended as a complete diet. Try and purchase it from a reputable company that hopefully is using good standards to produce their food, such as working with veterinary nutritionists during product design, can provide some information about the steps that they're taking to ensure nutritional soundness and good quality of the diets. It would be a red flag if a company couldn't provide any information, didn't respond to queries. For example, the best companies might be producing information about what steps they take to ensure the nutritional soundness, maybe providing laboratory analyses on their websites of their diets, things like that. So start by trying to ensure that it's a product coming from a good company that is being formulated to be nutritionally complete. And secondarily, with any diet change, there is a potential for adverse gastrointestinal reactions because you need to allow some time for a change in digestive enzymes and gut bacteria. So it's best to make a transition gradually over ideally a couple of weeks. And some animals that have been maintained on particular brands of meat-based pet foods for long periods of time that have certain flavorants added into them can be very reluctant to switch to new products, particularly old fussy cats and sometimes dogs as well. So it's helpful, I think, to only offer fresh food, tasty food. You can try things like small amount of vegetable oil, nori flakes, spirulina, and so on. These are all listed on my website, sustainablepetfood.info. You can try adding a small amount of new food to mostly the old food and mixing it together and gradually changing the proportions over time. And acting by your behavior as if nothing untoward is occurring, that you think that's a delicious meal being placed down there for your cat or dog, and perhaps if they don't eat it, you might consider it, so they better hurry up. But yeah, a gradual change, patience and persistence are probably the most important steps, and the most fussy animals that are particularly reluctant to change from their preferred diet have been successfully transitioned using these sorts of steps, although sometimes it can take as long as 6 months. But any amount of change has the potential to be beneficial for health outcomes, for environmental footprints, and so on.
And that's www.sustainablepetfood.info, sustainablepetfood.info. And what you described, mixing the new food in with the old food and gradually over the course of weeks, transitioning more and more toward the new food, is a technique that's used anytime you transition a diet from one cat food to another.
That's right. And don't be alarmed if your very intelligent cat mocks your attempts by carefully picking out the old food and ignoring the new food. Just carry on, act by your behavior as if nothing unusual is occurring, and slowly transition the food over time. And simply having the new food in close association with the old food will help to make the necessary mental connection in your pet's mind. And as I say, with gradual transition, patience and persistence, the most stubborn animals have been successfully transitioned to date, although it can take quite a number of months to achieve this.
Are there commercially available wet foods that are all plant-based?
Yes, there certainly are. One thing I always advise people to do is to purchase a commercially produced diet from a reputable pet food company that's nutritionally complete. Rather than attempt to formulate their own diets at home, it is technically possible to add supplements to a homemade diet and try to produce something that's nutritionally complete. But there are now enough studies showing that, unfortunately, this is too easy to get wrong. And even experts commonly make nutritional errors when doing this. So I think it is important to try to source a product from a reputable company working to good standards, hopefully with veterinary nutritionists on staff, to purchase a diet that is already formulated to be nutritionally complete. And the good news is that there are more and more of these products coming all the time. There's a revolution currently underway in this sector. There's already a lot of products available, but not necessarily in all parts of the world, but more are coming. There will be a sea change in this area in the coming few years.
Well, I certainly look forward to that sea change, and we will be keeping our eyes out for those new products. Andrew, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with? And feel free to reiterate any of the important points that you've mentioned previously that you feel bear repeating.
Yeah, I would just like to mention the research I'm working on at the moment on environmental sustainability is calculating the savings of things like land use, water use, pesticides, fertilizers, and so on that would occur if the world's cats and dogs transition to nutritionally sound vegan diets. And I haven't completed this yet, but just to dangle a couple of teasers in front of your audience, if I may. It seems that the amount of food energy that would be saved, because most of the grain that's fed to livestock is essentially lost in supporting the bodily functions of livestock and does not go to producing meat, milk, and eggs directly. So there's a lot of wastage in that sector. If you fed nutritionally sound vegan diets to cats and dogs, you'd save enough food energy to feed over 110 million people, which is more than the entire population of famine-prone Ethiopia. And you would also save over 6 billion land animals each year from slaughter, which is a number nearly equivalent to the entire human population of the Earth. You'd probably also save around 2 to 3% of all human-generated greenhouse gases. So this is a hugely exciting area. There is no reasonable question about this issue that there would not be major environmental benefits associated with this move. So I think anyone that's genuinely concerned about the environment, about species extinctions, needs to be seriously looking at plant-based foods, including for cats and dogs, if they have any at home.
Indeed. There's a lot at stake. And so the potential for the research you're doing to have a major impact on our planet, on the animals, on humans, is off the charts. And we will be watching carefully. Thank you so much for all you're doing.
Thank you very much, Bob. You're one of the first people to bring this information to North American audiences. Most of this research has just occurred. This is one of the first times a North American audience will have heard this information. Thank you for your efforts.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And again, it's right in line with the work that we've been doing since 1990. And this is a big step. So thank you, Andrew.
Great stuff. Thank you. Thank you.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been talking about what the research tells us about the ability of dogs and cats to thrive on, yes, a vegan diet. This is all very new. Our guest has been Andrew Knight, veterinary professor of animal welfare and ethics, founding director of the University of Winchester Center for Animal Welfare, researcher and author of two books on animal welfare, and a cat and dog veterinarian with many years of experience in general small animal practice. You can find out more about Andrew at www.sustainablepetfood.info. That's sustainablepetfood.info. And also check out www.andrewknight.info. That's Andrew Knight, KNIGHT.info. I'll just close by saying that I, like the vast majority of you who are listening, who have animals at home, love my cat family member, Mr. Kitty, beyond words. There's no way I would ever consider doing anything that would potentially negatively impact him. Again, he's such a valuable, major addition to our life experience and our family. Now, with that said, I also feel that since the evidence that we've just discussed shows that it's possible that a plant-based diet will not only allow Mr. Kitty to survive well, but to perhaps even thrive and do better than he is doing on the food that he's currently eating. With that said, I'm feeling that I need to get in action and explore how this shift might be possible. And that's because in addition to really caring about him, I also care about the fate of the animals, from the chickens to the turkeys to the fishes to the cows and all the others who are just as special and capable of love. They have the same ability to have feelings. They have varied emotions and personalities. They have interests of their own and a desire for a peaceful life that Mr. Kitty has, in their own species-specific ways, of course. But what they don't have is a home with humans who will care for and protect them and speak for them. My cat is protected. These animals are just like my cat, who are unprotected, no less valuable. But living a life that is the way it is because they were born in the wrong place as the wrong creature at the wrong time. And therefore, you know what happens to farm animals, and you know why they're being raised, and you know their eventual fate. Nobody likes that. Now we have options. When you couple that with all the negative impacts of animal agriculture on the world, I owe it to myself, Mr. Kitty, the world I live in, and every other creature on this planet to get this right. I'll also mention something else. When I decided to stop eating meat back in 1978, I did so thinking that I was actually going to be hurting my body. After scrambling to figure out how I could minimize the harm that I was going to be doing, I found out that, in fact, I was doing the best thing that you could do for your body, feeding it a clean, whole foods, plant-based diet. But I had that misconception because I was brought up in a world where the current thinking was that meat was what made you strong. I was an athlete, and one of my greatest pleasures in life was excelling, was pushing my body as hard as I could to chase down the furthest ball, to jump the highest, to run the fastest. And yet, I decided to make that change because I had found out, A, about what it was doing to animals, and subsequently, what it was doing to the world's food supply and what it was doing to our life support system. But I made that choice, despite that. Now we have a lot more information and actual research to go by that can allow us to do what's right for the world and not worry about hurting ourselves. And of course, the newest frontier is to not worry about hurting our animals. That research is developing, and we're going to be keeping a really close eye on it. And that's all we have time for on this evening's show. On that note, this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'll be with you again at the same time on Friday, November 11th at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of the month. And actually, our next month's show is going to be a Thanksgiving celebration with a live audience. So stay tuned to healthyplanetusa.org or go to our Facebook page, Healthy Planet USA, and we'll invite you to join us for that live radio event. When I'm not here, be sure to listen to the Natural Alternatives lineup with great hosts from Eugene Zamperone to Jennifer Green to Courtney Bozick to John Scardina. Cutting edge information on health, our environment, social justice issues, and much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. And for more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, again, visit our website at healthyplanetusa.org and our Facebook page at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. Consider rethinking what you're feeding to your animal family members. And finally, remember to enjoy every moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we share. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.